Have you ever had a reunion that you thought was about that impersonal? Well, we're going to see a very interesting reunion, but I have to tell you a personal story. Part of the time that I was at seminary and I was in the doctoral program, I was in charge of maintenance on an 18,000 square foot mansion. And the first Christmas I was there was a really interesting experience. The lady gave me a list of things to go and buy. So I went and I bought all of these things. Gave them to the maid, and the maid wrapped them all up, and I wrote the cards on them, and then I was given the addresses as to where to drop off all these expensive gifts. Then after a while, I got a Christmas bonus, and I was thinking, wow, it's personal. I even got a signature. When Jacob and Esau meet, we see some very interesting contrasts. And I'll tell you which one of them I like. I like Esau. But the interesting thing is, God did not bless Jacob because of how nice Jacob was. God blessed Jacob because he was faithful to the Abrahamic covenant, which he renewed to Isaac and renewed to Jacob. And as we look at this passage, we're going to see someone who is standoffish and is trying to cover up the facts of what God has really done, just as Jacob had been doing that in chapter 32. Jacob is fearful because Esau had threatened to kill him. And despite the fact that God has protected Jacob and has delivered him out of Israel, revealed himself to him at Bethel, and delivered him from all of the shenanigans that were pulled by Uncle Laban, Jacob is a fearful man. And Jacob is also a very shallow man. Jacob has left what he regards as the frying pan, and jumped out of it into the fire. And he's very nervous about his 96-year-old brother doing him harm. But of course, that's because Esau said that he was coming with 400 of his men. But they were coming to throw a party. And Jacob was fearful. Jacob, who had been delivered by God, who had promises that had been made by God to him, is willing to sacrifice the children born to the maidservants and also to sacrifice the maidservants and to sacrifice Leah's children and to sacrifice Leah and even Rachel and her child. And then he's got a parachute out there. Some way he's hoping at 96 years old of age to be able to escape those 400 men that have come looking to meet with him. Let's start at Genesis 33:1. Oh, let's see. I did forget that I... commercial break. Once an absent-minded professor, always an absent-minded professor. I forgot to show you this. This is a picture from today. You see what's on the back of that truck? 21,600 living waters that are on their way to Australia. So that was the big accomplishment for the past couple of days. Steve Mahoney and I built the box, built the pallet, and then Frank and Timothy came, and they were involved in getting the additional living waters here inside the building and up in the loft. So the drought of living waters in Southern California has ended. We received 4 pallets and immediately shipped off a little over half of them. Calvary Chapel received 5 pallets, and the drought has ended. And did you notice it's sprinkling? Okay, Genesis chapter 33. In verses 1 through 11, we're going to see Jacob and Esau actually meeting. Now, what happened in the preceding passage was that Jacob, as he came down into the vicinity of Israel, started worrying about Esau. And so what he did was he sent messengers along with part of his flocks. He ended up giving to Esau 550 animals. And what he did was he would send one person with a group of animals and then tell the second guy who has other animals, put a lot of space between you and that first guy. And he comes with his group of animals, and someone else comes with another group. And here's Esau coming up north with his 400 men, and he's having to work his way through the narrow Jordan Valley, and he keeps encountering all these herds that are going through the valley. So Jacob was busy trying to send all these gifts ahead in order to curry the favor of Esau. But he did something rather interesting. He kept referring to Esau as his lord, and he referred to himself as Esau's servant. Does that ring any bells? Was not the prophecy that was given to Rebekah that the older shall serve the younger? And what is Jacob doing? He's trying to downplay the truth of that because he's afraid of Esau. And he thinks that it's better to run away from the truth and to kind of massage it. You know, he sounds like a politician. I could wax eloquent here. He thinks that it's appropriate to massage the truth in order to save his neck. Well, they finally meet here in verses 1 through 11 of chapter 33. And now we're going to see the courage of Jacob. In verses 1 through 2, Jacob divided his family as he saw Esau. Verse 1. Now Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the 2 maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. What's the idea here? Well, if Esau is still mad, and if Esau is still holding a grudge, the most expendable members of the family are going to be the first to perish. And what does Jacob do? He remains behind. We're going to find that he hasn't crossed the river. Let's look here at the map, and I'll show you this map first because it has the towns that I want to show you. It has all of them. But the next map is a little clearer. So notice where the circles are. The one that's to the lower left is at Bethel. That's the place where God revealed himself to Jacob. Remember the ziggurat? We saw the hillside that looks like a set of stair steps. And God used that as a visual in Jacob's dream. We saw that the word ladder, which is the way that it's been translated, it's the only time the word ever shows up, and it's closely related to the word ziggurat. Everybody made a guess at ladder, but this hillside looks sort of like a ziggurat, like a stepped pyramid. That's where God revealed himself. And interestingly enough, Jacob made a vow on that occasion to return there. That's very interesting. Now, in chapter 32, Jacob was in the vicinity of Mahanaim. Now, this is where the map makers have placed it. I think it's on the north side. It hasn't been firmly identified. But then you'll also notice Sukkot that's up there along the Jabbok River as well. That's going to come up in this passage. And then Shechem is over to the northwest. Let's look at the next map. It's a little clearer, I think. Oh, sorry. It's clearer on my screen. Those are the areas where that are pertinent to this particular passage. Jacob has been way up north in Haran, and he has come down here. And then south of Moab, further south and eastward is Edom, which is where Esau is coming from. Jacob is very afraid. So what does he do? He divides his family. And he chooses those that are expendable, most expendable, and he sends them out first. Jacob is certainly depending on the Lord here, is he not? Well, then you know that ultimately that moment where the two of them come face to face is going to happen. So in verses 3 to 4, Jacob bowed ostentatiously before Esau, but Esau embraced him. Then he crossed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times. What's he doing? You're my superior. And he does it over and over and over again, 7 times. Until he came near to his brother. And look who reaches out for the embrace. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Who here is really interested in the family reunion? Esau. You see why I say I like Esau better than Jacob? They have been years apart from one another. And although Esau received a secondary blessing, what we called an anti-blessing, he was thoroughly satisfied with his life. Now, I'm going to say something here that you know that I'm not afraid to hold a position that not many others hold. Most people think that Esau was an unbeliever. Doesn't work that way. There's not a single passage that would give an indication of that. And furthermore, the commentary by the book of Hebrews about Esau says that the author tells believers not to be like Esau, throwing away reward. Kind of reminiscent of some of the things that Ricardo was speaking about on Sunday, isn't it? Would it really make sense for the author of Hebrews to use an unbeliever as a way to illustrate for believers, don't throw away your reward like Esau did? The commentary by Hebrews is that he is a believer. And I think he's really the nicer of the two guys. But God made promises to Jacob. And God is honoring those promises. You look at them and you say, who really wanted to meet up with his brother? Esau did. If Jacob had never seen him, he had never seen Esau again, I think he would have been just as happy. You know, when God revealed himself to Jacob back at Bethel, Jacob was talking about returning to the land and coming to see his father. Where does Isaac live? Way down here in Hebron. Way down here. There's no mention of Jacob coming down to see his father. Sure. I'm sure that he did at a later point. Okay, thanks. Okay, Hebron is way down here, but it's up here where this passage takes place, and Jacob seems to be in no rush to see anybody. Is more interested in taking care of number one. I know if I hadn't seen my father for a long time and he was as old as Isaac, after all, Jacob is 96. His father's pretty old. His father lived to a ripe old age of 180 years. But Jacob is in no hurry to see his father, and his father is old. Very old. Well, in verses 5 through 7, guess who initiates the conversation? Guess who it is that asks about family? Esau. Esau asks Jacob about his family before Jacob's family bows to him. Verses 5 through 7. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children, the four wives, the 12 kids, and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants came near, they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. So we've got Jacob bowing down seven times, and then it's a parade of all the family members in order of importance. The least important bow first, and then gradually you get to the most important. And Jacob is putting on a show. Now, I don't think Esau was saying, "Oh, where did you pick up all these people? I mean, you know, are you just picking up hitchhikers along the road?" He said, "Tell me about your family. Introduce me." And what happens? Everybody bowed down. Esau is a very simple man. And Jacob is living in a world of ostentation. Well, then, Esau has another puzzlement. Basically, what were all those animals that you sent before you with people saying, "Well, Jacob's behind"? And then I run into another group of animals being led by some people, and then they say, "Jacob's behind." And what was all that about? So in verse 8, Esau asks about all the animals and people that went before Jacob, and Jacob said that the gifts were to curry Esau's favor. Verse 8. Then Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company which I met?" And he said, "These are to find favor in the sight of my Lord." Notice "my Lord." Notice how Jacob is busy massaging the truth, because as long as Esau is around, I better give a message here. We're not very strong militarily. You know, we're peace-loving people, and not very strong. And you know, you're more powerful, and you know, you're way up there, and so on and so forth. And then you get to a different audience, and it's a different message. But he's really trying to downplay this. But at the same time, he says, I thought I had to win your favor. And that's after Esau has heartily embraced him, asked about his family, and said, I just don't get it. Why are all these people being sent off before you? And now we get a little bit of an insight into what's going on inside Esau. Verses 9 through 11. Satisfaction with what he had caused Esau to decline the gifts, but Jacob insisted. Verses 9 through 11. But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Notice he didn't call him my servant, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, no, please, if I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God. And you were pleased with me. Please take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. So he urged him, and he took it. Esau was quite content with his life. He was happy to have run into Jacob, and really didn't have any need for all this that Jacob wanted to give him. Jacob thought that getting a few goats and a few camels and so on and so forth would make Esau not want to kill him. Esau has embraced him, and what does he say now? Oh, not, I thought it would be a nice gesture, since I didn't handle things all that well. He's just wanting to say, you know, I thought you wanted to kill me, basically, and I thought that maybe I could bribe you. Notice how transparent Jacob's thoughts are. Now, you might wonder about a statement in verse 10, where he says, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God. What's he referring to? God had promised to protect him. You remember where he wrestled with what I would say is Jesus Christ himself in chapter 32? Very interesting passage that we had that we considered last week. And in that passage, he was told that he had wrestled with God and with man. Yeah, he had a lot of struggles with God. Had a lot of struggles with people, but he's still alive and able to speak of it. And what he's saying right here is, I know that the reconciliation that has been effected is something that God has done. I think that what he's saying at this point is, you know, when I see your face and your countenance is favorable towards me, it's like, wow, God had to go before us for that to happen. But you still get the sense that even though Jacob acknowledges that point, that there's still a superficiality about the way that Jacob is approaching this whole thing. He keeps insisting that he take the gifts. in order to have some sort of an advantage over Esau. Well, I, your servant, managed to bless you, my Lord. And you can almost hear it in that tone of voice. Esau is a very simple man. He was described as a man of the fields. But what was Jacob described as during his early years? A man of the tents. Esau was one who hunted. And Jacob was one who looked for angles, looked for ways to get ahead, looked for ways to get on top by stepping on others. God could make promises to Jacob, but Jacob still is playing a lot of the same old games. When you look at this reconciliation that happened, I can say in a very straightforward way, Esau was reconciled to Jacob, but I don't think Jacob was reconciled to Esau. Here these are 96-year-old men. With Esau able to say, essentially, I thought it was really terrible when you took all those things away from me. You took away the firstborn rights and you took away the blessing. But God has blessed me. The anti-blessing is just fine. I like it. And he was quite content to meet with his brother. But Jacob is holding Esau off. And he's going to hold him off at arm's length and even further as the passage develops. Because what's going to happen now in verses 12 through 17 is that Jacob and Esau will separate. In verses 12 through 14, Esau suggested that they travel together, but Jacob declined. He said, no, I don't think so. I don't want to travel with you. Verses 12 through 14. Then Esau said, let us take our journey. Let us go, and I will go before you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord, and notice that once again, knows that the children are weak, and the flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard one day, all the flock will die. Please let my Lord go on ahead before his servant. I will lead on slowly at a pace, which the livestock that go before me and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord in Seir. Jacob is saying, I've got little kids. I've got livestock, some of them being very young in age. And I think your 400 men are going to drive them so hard that some of them are going to die. Why don't you go ahead and I'll catch up. I'll be right behind you. When I look on the map, I don't see anything about Jacob going down to Seir, down here below the map. Jacob was not in a rush to see his father. And Jacob isn't above stretching the truth here to say, why don't you go ahead and we'll catch up with you. I don't think he has any intention of catching up with his brother. It's, okay, it was nice seeing you. Goodbye. And maybe I'll see you someday again. Quite a reunion. Wasn't it part and parcel of the Abrahamic covenant that they were supposed to be a blessing? Jacob's a pill. But God is honoring the promises that he made to Jacob. Well, Esau tried to be helpful. Esau said, okay, I see your point. You've got little kids and you've got young animals. I can leave some of my men behind to help you out. So in verse 15, Esau suggested that he leave people behind to assist Jacob. But Jacob refused. And Esau said, now let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. But he said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of, you got it, my Lord. Do you get the impression that Jacob would just as soon have Esau as far away from him as he could possibly be? This is one of those reunions that's like a form Christmas letter, like the one that I read at the beginning. No interest in this one to whom he's related. Well, in verses 16 through 17, Esau seems to have caught the hint. Esau returned to Seir, but Jacob didn't go to Seir, even though he said, oh, I'll just go a little slower than you. I'll get down to Seir. No, he went to Sukkot. My, where's Sukkot? Where is Jacob? At the time of this vision, Jacob was at Mahanaim, which I think is north of the river, north of the Jabbok River, and he went to Sukkot. Does that really sound like he was planning to do what he told Esau he was going to do? Doesn't sound like it to me. Just went a couple miles. And in the next passage, we'll find him going northwest from there. He's not heading anywhere near his brother. Now, should he have gone down to Seir? I don't think so. But Jacob could have said, that's not where God wants me to go. And how would he know where God wanted him to go? He knew the land that was promised to Abraham and to Isaac. And he knew that before he left the land, when he was in Bethel, God revealed himself to him there. And besides that, he had made a vow that he was going to return to Bethel. Okay, let's look at verses 16 and 17. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Sukkot, built himself a house. Tents aren't good enough for him anymore. And made booths for his livestock. Doesn't look like he's planning to take off real soon, does it? Therefore, the name of the place is called Sukkot. And Sukkot is booths or shelters. Jacob was saying, you know, I'll follow you. I'll just be a little longer because my little kids and all my young livestock, they just can't go as fast as your 400 men. Do you see why Jacob didn't want Esau to leave behind some people to help him go? Because Jacob didn't want to go where they would have been taking him. He's planting roots down here. This is where he wants to be. Really a likable guy, isn't he? With friends like this, who needs enemies? Well, then, after a while, he decided that he needed to move from there, but he didn't head back to Bethel. Didn't even head down to see his father. He went off to Shechem. So in verses 18 to 20, upon arriving at Shechem, Jacob bought land and built an altar Then Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. When he came from Paddan Aram, that's up north, when he was with Laban, and pitched his tent before the city. And he bought the parcel of land where he had pitched his tent from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected an altar there and called it El Elohe Israel, God, the God of Israel. Well, I can say that building the altar was a good thing, but turn ahead to chapter 35. This is after the rape of Dinah, which we'll consider the next time, and all the problems that ensued from that. Then God said to Jacob, "Arise, go to Bethel and dwell there, and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother." God finally had to intervene on this and say, I know where you ought to go. You need to finally get around to honoring the vow that you made to worship me at this place that I set up. Jacob is all focused on his own devices, his own interests, and he's setting up problems for himself. Genesis chapter 34, that we will consider next time, will be a major problem that happened, and that happened years later, because in this passage, all of his children he described as little. But the daughter, who was born fairly late in the chronology of the children, is of marriageable age, and she was raped in Genesis chapter 34. So a period of time elapses. Jacob stays in Shechem for a long time. And God had to remind him, "Hey, you told me you were going to get down to Bethel." Jacob has a God who's faithful to him. But you have to look at Jacob and say, he's not being a blessing, and he certainly doesn't have God as his priority in life. All the way through this book, we see God's faithfulness to the patriarchs. And as Moses is writing this book, he is seeking to persuade the Israelites of his day that the God that they had heard stories about was a God who was faithful to promises. And that was the God that they needed to focus their attention upon. We're going to have an interesting passage this next time that we consider. Jacob, because of his own devices, keeps setting up problems where if he were following the Lord, many of the problems that he faced could have been avoided, could have been solved. Esau, pretty likable guy. Jacob, there are some question marks, but God is faithful. And we look at ourselves. We're supposed to be a blessing too, aren't we? We've been given the gift of everlasting life and the opportunity to proclaim it. We have been given the Word of God. But we look at our lives and sometimes we look a little bit more like Jacob, don't we? Now, Esau had his problems. He wasn't very interested in what God considered important when it came to the firstborn rights, when it came to the blessing. But Jacob had his problems too, didn't he? When God evaluates us at the judgment seat of Christ, he's going to ask, how faithful have we been with that that he has given to us? Jacob was one who, like a politician, could explain away the blessings that he had from God in order to try to win the favor of someone. And Jacob, in fear, could sacrifice his wives and his kids, but hadn't his father and his grandfather done the same thing? And what happened when Abraham started fearing that people would think that Sarah was beautiful and want to kill him? Say, you're my sister. Ends up with her going into the harem twice. What does Isaac do? And Jacob looks and he says, well, I've got my favorite wife, I've got my second favorite wife, and then I have my two maidservants. And he says, I'm going to take my choice here, and I'm going to, first of all, protect myself. What kind of a blessing is he? But did God withhold the blessing that he gave to Jacob because Jacob wasn't a blessing? No. But you know what? Jacob has a lot of misery in his life, doesn't he? Look at all the things that God has to keep doing in his life to try to get his attention. We're better off if we heed the word of God than if we need God to keep reminding us and keep trying to catch our attention. God's able to do that. But he likes for people to respond to the word in appropriate ways. Does it make sense why I use those Christmas cards that I read at the beginning for an introduction? Jacob didn't really reconcile with his brother. Esau, who was up front, reconciled. Jacob, who was always maneuvering, never got it figured out. He was clueless.